So you deny that Ireland is Europe's weakest link then?
I think that language, I'd have issues with it, quite frankly. It's not as if the entirety of Europe is depending on us for its security.
In percentage terms, the Republic of Ireland spends less on defence than any other country in the EU. Even Malta and Luxembourg. Ireland has no military radar, no fighter jets, and for a maritime nation, very few ships.
Simon Coveney says we're not a weak link. He's absolutely 100% wrong. We are so badly funded when it comes to our defences. We don't have a radar system to monitor. We rely on the generosity of our neighbours to patrol our waters and patrol our skies. And to say we're not a weak link is an insult to the Irish people.
And Ireland's defence forces are shrinking fast. Twice as many leave than are recruited every year.
10 years ago, there was 10,500 people in the Irish Defence Force. And today, there's about 7,800. So there's been a 25% drop in headcount.
Defence was never a priority for Ireland. But with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, some are asking if neutrality really means being defenceless. And some are questioning how realistic it is.
Let's remember, Russia has threatened Ireland as a member of the EU for slapping sanctions on the Kremlin, and they could become very, very aggressive towards Ireland. It's important that we're able to defend ourselves.
Others say Ireland has no enemies, should stay out of wars, and shouldn't waste another cent on arms. But what about a potential united Ireland? Would Ireland need an enhanced military capacity to deal with that?
The current state of defence force is not capable of looking after this jurisdiction, the 26 counties at the moment. It would certainly not be able to deal with an additional 6 counties on top of that.
In part one of a 3-part series, I spoke to independent TD Cathal Berry, who's a strong advocate for Ireland having a defence capability. So, I have with me now Cathal Berry, who's an independent TD for Kildare South. He's a medical doctor and a former Irish Army Ranger, which is the elite wing of the Irish Army, of the Irish Defence Forces. Cathal, you're very welcome to the Bell Tale.
Good to be on, Kieran. Thanks for having me on your show.
Cathal, you've obviously been taken on as one of your, I suppose, special interests, things you campaign on as a TD. Naturally, given where you're located and given your career, you have a great interest in the Defence Forces. What is the current state of the Irish Defence Forces, in your opinion?
Yeah, just a great question, I suppose. I would say they're probably in the poorest state they've been in over 50 years, would probably be the short answer. And if you want to look at just one simple metric, 10 years ago, there was 10,500 people in the Irish Defence Forces. And today, there's about 7,800. So there's been a 25% drop in headcount in just 10 years. And if you were to apply that to nursing or to teaching or to medicine or with doctors, if you reduce the headcount and staffing numbers of those professions by 25%, you would get chaos in their various workplaces. And that's exactly what we see in the Irish Defence Forces at the moment. There's just mayhem, really, and it's very, very disorganised and demoralised, and we really need political intervention here to get things moving again.
That is certainly a very dramatic decline in the numbers. I mean, there is, I believe, a statutory requirement, the statutory strength that the Defence Forces should be at. I take it it's not at that.
Correct. So there's no real statutory one, and that is not in primary legislation, but there's an understanding that it should be at least, so the minimum strength should be 9,500. But 15 months ago, a commission on the Defence Forces reported, and they were recommending, and the government accepted this, that the minimum strength should be 11,500. So we're drastically below where we should be. We have great quality people, but the problem is there's not enough of them. So we have the quality, just not the quantity.
So in terms of the capabilities, and I think you've indicated the capabilities are quite low, what are the Defence Forces capable of? If we speak in terms of, well, I mean, an extreme example is invasion or an incursion or maybe even some sort of intimidation. Is there any sort of plan or thoughts in terms of what would be done to deal with those situations, given the state of the Defence Forces as they are? Because, I mean, obviously people in the Defence Forces have to deal with the resources that they actually have.
Yeah, so another great point. Let's just take something even simpler just to prove your point. Let's take the state of our naval service, and we don't even have a navy. It's called a naval service. That used to have 9 ships before Russia invaded Ukraine 15 months ago, and now we're down to 4 ships. So it's even dropped, its capability has dropped by over 50% even since Russia invaded Ukraine. So while most European countries are scaling up their defence capability, Ireland is actually scaling it down, and not even from a military perspective, but if you look at the naval service again, the possibly about 4 ships that we could put to sea at a push, because we lack crew, there's not enough crew because the state isn't paying its military sailors well enough. So just make a capability point that the search and rescue function of the naval services severely depleted. Its ability to interdict smuggling of vulnerable people, of weapons, of drugs, drastically reduced as well. And then from a maritime security point of view, that we have the Russian ships that are coming down from the North Pole, basically, right down the west coast of Ireland. We have minimal, almost no capability to even escort them through Irish economic waters, and absolutely no capability whatsoever to even see below the surface of the Atlantic. So not a single one of the Irish naval vessels have sonar capability. And that's not the Navy's fault. That's as a result of decades of underinvestment in our military. And unfortunately, the day of reckoning has arrived now, and our troops, be they on land, sea, or air, just do not have the resources and the assets and the equipment to carry out their function.
Of course, some people would say that Russia is no threat to Ireland, and that, you know, this is people trying to scaremonger Ireland into NATO membership. What do you think?
Yeah, there would be the very same people and the very same type of people who said in January and early February of last year that Russia is not going to invade Ukraine, that this is NATO stoking up tensions to justify their budgets. Again, 2 weeks before the 24th of February, I stood up in the Irish Parliament here in the Dáil in Dublin and said, look, the consensus estimate is that there's an 80% likelihood that the invasion will take place once the Chinese Olympics finish, and do we have any contingency planning here in Ireland? And immediately afterwards, when the live TV was switched off, I was approached by numerous TDs from all across the house going, well, what are you talking about? What's going on here? Surely this isn't going to happen. And all the intelligence was pointing towards an invasion, particularly the intelligence from the UK and from the US, who know their old adversary really, really well. So all the pointers were suggesting, and indeed almost confirming, it was going to happen. But we were clueless in relation to our response. So to answer your specific question, if I was looking for military advice, I wouldn't be going to those people who said that people are just imagining this threat to justify resources or justifying equipment or budgets, because they've been proven unbelievably wrong in the last 15 months. And they haven't had the courtesy or the decency to withdraw their statements and recognise that they were wrong and that they were briefing Parliament and people incorrectly.
So, Cathal, we know that Ireland, the Republic of Ireland especially, is highly dependent on foreign direct investment and technology companies from the United States of America. And that obviously entails connectivity with the United States of America, which we know is undersea cables, which go out from the west coast of Ireland. And obviously, it's not just Ireland depending on them. But if Russia decided to sever that link for whatever reason, and, you know, I think most people would agree that that is possible. Could realistically Ireland ever spend enough money to neutralize that threat?
But again, nobody can offer a 100% guarantee. Just look at what happened in Nord Stream 2. Most people don't even know who carried out that that event when the two Nord Stream pipes were blown up. So you can't give a 100% guarantee in any circumstance. But what you can do is provide a minimum credible deterrent. where somebody who wanted to do some damage to this country in whatever capacity would have to weigh up the cost-benefit analysis, that if they tried to do something, what are the chances of them at least being detected? And secondly, what are the chances of them being intercepted and being caught in the act? So at the moment, the cost-benefit analysis is very, very good, and that you can do whatever you wish within the Irish jurisdiction, be it on land, sea and air, and there's almost nothing the authorities here can do. They can't even detect what's happening credibly, let alone do something about it. Say, for instance, in our airspace, and we have very, very busy airspace here, the main air corridor between North America and continental Europe passes over, passes through Irish airspace. But not only do we not have the means to intercept anything that's taking place, we don't even have the means to monitor it. So we're the only EU country of the EU 27 that does not have primary radar coverage of our own airspace, which is a shocking indictment, really. We have secondary radar coverage, of course. So if an aircraft tells us that it's there, we'll know their altitude, their speed and their call sign. But if they switch off the transponder, if they refuse to engage correctly with air traffic control, there's not a thing the Irish authorities can do. They can't even detect the aircraft, let alone do anything about it. So we have a huge amount of work to do.
Yeah, but I suppose that some people might say, well, we've a huge homeless, there's a huge, there's cost of living crisis, there's a homeless problem. Does Ireland really need to be spending money on fighter aircraft? Now, we do have the strange situation, the extremely strange situation, as has been reported in recent weeks, that there's some sort of arrangement that the RAF, the UK's Air Force, would cover Ireland in the case of an emergency. I have been speaking to other journalists and other commentators, and you know, we do agree that for a country which has fought long and hard for independence, it is very, very strange that this military service is provided by the RAF. But yeah. yet, should we spend the money on fighter planes which are unlikely to ever need to be used?
So yeah, I agree very much with you. So I suppose 2 points in response. First of all, Ireland doesn't have a Coast Guard service here at all in this jurisdiction. What we have is 4 Coast Guard helicopters from 4 search and rescue bases that aren't owned by the state at all. It's actually a private contract where a private contractor is paid €65 million approximately every single year for providing that service over a 10-year period. So it's about €750 million. That's going to be, I suppose, rolled over in the next few years. But an air policing service could be provided for half that annual cost. No one's looking for fighter aircraft per se, but you could get, if you wished, advanced trainers, which would be supersonic, yes. They would be capable of being armed, but they wouldn't really be war fighting aircraft per se. But what they could be very, very easily is an air policing service. And that's what every country in the EU, bar Malta, actually has. So they can be leased, and people can be trained up and provided, the full service could be provided for between 30 and 35 million a year, which is very, very reasonable for the rich country that we are, if we want to protect and resource our neutrality. The second point I'd raise is, say, for example, Sweden or Austria, they would be quite heavily armed countries, neutral countries currently. Switzerland, same story, neutral country also. But they resource their defence forces, but they still have excellent social services, excellent hospitals, excellent housing. I mean, we talk down here in Dublin about the Vienna model of housing. And they would argue that a precondition for having all those excellent services is to have this safe and secure environment, which is so important for a functioning economy and for a functioning society. So if you speak to any ambassadors or any diplomats from those countries, they will say their countries have those excellent social services, not in spite of having a quality military, but because of having a quality military, that people are prepared to invest and take reasonable financial risks in those countries because the country is safe, the country is secure, and if the country was attacked, from land, sea or air, or from cyber, that they have this minimum credible deterrent to protect any investments in those countries. So it's not a binary choice. You don't have to just have one or the other. You can actually have both, and Ireland should certainly consider that.
Yeah, but it is understandable. I mean, I take all of those points on board, and you know, and you didn't mention, you know, huge weapons, and I don't want to be facetious, but I, you know, it is understandable. I think that when people are speaking from a military point of view, you know, that it could come across at some stage, you know, that it's more toys for the boys kind of thing. You know, I mean, I would understand that. If I was in the army, I'd want a Leopard 2. If I was a pilot, I'd want an F-16. I'd want to be top gunner. But is that going too far? You're not saying that. You're saying it's a more reasonable defense capability that you're after. You're not really trying to have this, you know, very expensive force.
Yeah, I agree. Again, we're not even asking for a defense capability, really. It's not really an airspace defense problem. It's actually a flight safety problem. So there are numerous aircraft in Irish airspace every week which don't cooperate with air traffic control. And what would normally happen in a normal functioning country is that if there was, for instance, an airliner that was not communicating with air traffic control, and that happened over a number of minutes, then aircraft would be scrambled and they would intercept that aircraft to make sure that everything's okay. They would look in, they would fly very close to the cockpit, they'd look in, make sure the pilots are conscious, that there hasn't been an aircraft inadvertent decompression or anything like that. If there's a problem with communication, they would use hand signals to get the pilots to switch their frequencies so that they can liaise air traffic control. And if it was a military aircraft or a rogue aircraft or whatever that was still refusing to engage with air traffic control, then obviously those intercepts would escort that aircraft through Irish airspace to make sure that they don't collide with any other aircraft that's crossing over. So primarily, it's not a defence issue at all. You defend your airspace in wartime, but you police it in peacetime. So for a sovereign state or a supposed sovereign state to not be able to police its territorial waters and its economic waters and its airspace and even its landmass at times, that reflects very, very poorly on the country, particularly for a jurisdiction that has fought so hard for its independence and is rightly so proud of its independence, to have to rely on external actors to provide that security, that very, very baseline security that nearly every other country has. That's a bit of humiliation. And that's the main reason why this deal with the RAF that's been floated around. Everybody seems to think that it's the worst kept secret in the world. And the state out here are not discussing it. They're claiming that it's for reasons of national security that it's not being discussed. But I think the reality is it's for reasons of national humiliation. NATO, there would be quite a vocal, unrepresented group down here in this jurisdiction that would be bashing NATO at every opportunity. But now we're beginning to realise that NATO is most likely providing this airspace policing service for us. And that has changed a lot of people's views over the last couple of weeks. So a lot of interesting developments taking place in Ireland at the moment.
And where do you stand on NATO, Cal?
My own personal view, I'd have an open mind on all those things. I'm not ideologically wedded to any course of action, but we talk about the three N's down here. On one side, you have the uber neutrals on one side. You have the uber NATO people who want to join NATO on the other side. I'd be more of the normal variety in the middle, where you can say, okay, we don't have to join a regional security arrangement. We don't have to sign up to a common defence. But there's a huge amount of space in the middle where we can cooperate extensively. And that's how Ireland's neutrality has been practiced over the last 100 years, and that we don't formally adopt a particular posture, but we cooperate extensively with our neighbours and partners when it's in Ireland's vital national interest. And only a couple of weeks ago, I'd say maybe about 10 days ago, Ireland signed up to the hybrid warfare centre of excellence in Helsinki. And then formally last week, we signed up to the NATO cyber centre of excellence in Estonia. We're members of the Partnership for Peace. I'm a member of PESCO. We cooperate massively on a bilateral basis. I mean, my great uncle was one of the first Irish military missions that were sent to the United States in 1926, so almost 100 years ago, where six military officers went over there for about a year and a half, learned all they could from the US military, and then established trading institutions, military training institutions back here in Ireland. So for the last 100 years, Ireland has been doing this, cooperating on a case-by-case basis. And I think that's probably the consensus way to approach. Even if somebody wanted to join NATO, even if Ireland applied to join NATO today, NATO, I would believe, would look at Ireland and just go, fellas, you're nowhere at the races. You're a basket case. You need a 20 years of reform before you would even be eligible for consideration. So the message that NATO would most likely give us is get your own house in order first, and then we can look at an application further down the track. So I don't see any NATO application or any acceptance happening anytime soon. But it is good to have a discussion. There is a forum on international security happening next month. There's a day in Cork, a day in Galway, and 2 days in Dublin Castle, where at least we can discuss national policy, and that is national defence policy. That has been a problem in the past, that defence was such a dirty word. It was such a taboo subject that it couldn't even be discussed because it was so contentious. So finally, at least, we can have the conversation. I mean, defence is just like another policy area for a country, like housing, like health, like education. Defence is a fundamental policy area, but for the last 100 years, it was just something that couldn't even be discussed in this jurisdiction. So I think there's been some progress from that point of view.
I suppose it's, as you said, it's somehow mixed up with the concept of neutrality, and people somehow thinking that neutrality almost means that your army is merely symbolic. And some people have said, and I would suspect this isn't your view, Cal, and I've read this in recent weeks, that somehow neutrality in itself is Ireland's best defence. I take it you wouldn't be of that opinion.
Well, I would say the model of neutrality practiced by Sweden currently, Switzerland and Austria, that would be a good defence, because it is proper neutrality. And that they recognise that they have to stand alone and fight alone if necessary. So they have resourced their policy choices. Ireland is in a particularly exposed and vulnerable position in that we have decided we would like to be neutral, but we haven't resourced it at all. So in reality, we're not neutral. We're just merely defenceless. And that is probably the most dangerous and most risky policy position and practice to adopt, in that you're claiming to be neutral and that you're declining any collective security arrangement either across the Atlantic or in Europe, but at the same time, you're not providing for your own defence. So we're wide open. We're, I would argue, uniquely exposed from an international perspective, and that's a very, very dangerous place to be. So neutral, absolutely, if you resource it, but defenceless, you're asking for trouble. And I'll just give you a classic example. Last year, a small aircraft from France laden with drugs flew across and landed in an airstrip in Longford. Couldn't even have been detected by Irish air traffic control because their transponder was turned off. So these are the little instances that we're actually detecting. Can you imagine how many are taking place that we're not detecting? We know about these narco subs that have, these are kind of semi-submersible submarines that are able to cross the Atlantic now from the South America. They've been found, a number of them have been found in Portugal and in Spain. None have been found on the Irish coast, of course, but that doesn't mean they haven't landed. As we'd always say, from a scientific point of view, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. And so even if you don't even focus on the defence question at the moment, just focus on basic security, basic sovereignty. The country is awash with drugs. Every town and village in Ireland has a problem with it now, and there's good reason for that, because the motherships that are coming across the Atlantic with large quantities of drugs are not being intercepted, are not being detected. And once they make landfall, their consignments are broken into smaller packages spread throughout the country, and it's a nightmare for the Garda Síochána to intervene. What we should be doing is we should be doing proper deterrence, proper detection, and proper interception off the coast, and preventing these vessels, be they on the surface or subsurface, from landing in Ireland. But unfortunately, we're not even doing the basics, and that's a problem.
Cal, can I ask you one last question? A number of academics in the last year, and there are many discussions around a United Ireland, and that's to do with political campaigning, changes in demographics in the north here. Some academics, most notably Brendan O'Leary, and it's been picked up by commentators here in the north, have pointed out that the Republic of Ireland's defence forces are simply not capable of, as stands, of dealing with the realities that a united Ireland would bring about, even in best case scenario. And some have said that, well, it just shows that no forward planning is being done in the Republic for that possible scenario. What would your view be?
I would say that's absolutely 110% correct. So 110% correct in that the Irish Defence Force do not have the capability, should it occur, should the people decide, to even police in the north, as the six counties up there. And also there's absolutely no contingency planning being done for it. That's for sure. Even the conversation hasn't occurred. So we've had this shared island project or initiative, which I agree with very much. And they've had discussions about tourism and cross-border infrastructure, cross-border health, education, Erasmus, all that stuff. And that's all good stuff. But there hasn't been a single seminar on defence and security arrangements in the event of a reunification in whatever capacity. Just a classic example, that the six counties are in NATO. There's over a million people that live in Northern Ireland are quite happy with the security that's being provided by the UK Armed Forces and by extension NATO as well. And if they were to agree to consent to any kind of reunification, there would be a remarkable reduction in that level of security. So a wider question is that if this jurisdiction, if Ireland wanted to link up with the two political entities and Ireland decided to link up, would it be a brand new country? Would that brand new country decide to become a member of NATO or not? And if you think back to 1948, Ireland actually looked to join NATO in 1948 when it was established. But one of the preconditions for joining NATO was that you would recognise the current territorial integrity of all NATO countries. So that was a very big problem for the authorities in Dublin, because they would have to recognise that the six counties were fully part of the United Kingdom. So Ireland declined to join NATO for that only reason. That was the only reason they declined. In fact, the Dublin authorities then decided to ask for a bilateral arrangement with the US, that there would be a common defence arrangement separately from NATO between the US and Ireland, and the US declined to enter into that bilateral arrangement. So Ireland has, I guess, from a historical perspective, has no ideological problem with joining NATO. The one issue was was partition at the time and the need to formally recognise the existence of the border and the six counties as part of the United Kingdom. That was the reason why Dublin declined in 1948. So I guess to answer your question, no, absolutely, the current state of defence force is not capable of looking after this jurisdiction, the 26 counties at the moment. It would certainly not be able to deal with an additional six counties on top of that. And there's absolutely zero planning from a contingency point of view or otherwise to prepare for such possibility or eventuality. And the big question for me is, if Northern Ireland is currently in NATO, this new entity of a political country, if it ever materialises, will that have to join NATO? Should that join NATO, or should it become an independent, non-aligned country like the jurisdiction is at the moment?
Cathal Berry, TD for Kildare South, thank you very much. In part two of this three-part series, I'll be speaking to Paul Murphy, who's a TD for People Before Profit. He's a strong advocate for Ireland remaining neutral. This episode of The Bell Tale was produced by myself, Kieran Dunbar, sound designed by Graham Davidson. Clips from Virgin Media and RTE.